We put a lot of faith in judges, right? To be fair. I mean, especially when it comes to sentencing. But what happens when a judge uses information that wasn't actually presented in court? Stuff the defendant never even had the chance to talk about, let alone try to prove it's wrong.
Yeah, tricky situation.
Well, that's exactly what we're diving into today. Williams v. New York, a 1949 Supreme Court case. And you wouldn't believe it, but it affects how sentencing works even now.
It's wild, right? This case really cemented how much power judges have when it comes to sentencing someone. They can consider all sorts of information, even things that might not have been allowed during the trial itself.
Like what kind of information?
Oh, we're talking stuff about the person's past, maybe opinions from people who know them, things like that. And get this, it applies in death penalty cases too, which, as you can imagine, caused a whole lot of controversy.
Okay, so walk me through it. Who's this Samuel Williams, and how did his case end up at the Supreme Court?
So, Samuel Williams, he was convicted of murder, first degree, in a New York court. The jury, after hearing everything in court, recommended life in prison. Seemed pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, doesn't the judge usually just go with what the jury says?
You'd think, right? But in this case, nope. The judge decided to go his own way and sentenced Williams to death.
Whoa, hold on. That's a massive difference. What made the judge go so far off the jury's recommendation?
That's where it gets interesting. The judge relied on information from a probation report. This report had all sorts of details about Williams' past, things like accusations of burglaries he may have done before, and even stuff about his, quote, morbid sexuality. Pretty harsh words.
Yikes.
And here's the real problem. None of this was brought up during the actual trial, so Williams never got a chance to defend himself against these accusations.
See, that sets off alarm bells for me. If a judge could just use info from outside the courtroom, doesn't that open the door for bias? I mean, how do we know it's even fair?
You're hitting on the big legal question here. Does using this kind of unverified outside evidence violate the 14th Amendment, you know, the right to due process? The Supreme Court said no, but it was a close call. And there was a strong dissenting opinion, which we'll definitely talk about later.
I bet. So the court basically said it's okay for a judge to look beyond what was presented at trial when deciding the sentence. What was their logic there?
Justice Black, he wrote the majority opinion. He had a few main points. First, he leaned on historical practice, saying judges have always had some flexibility when it comes to sentencing. Like, it's always been done this way kind of thing.
Ah, so using tradition as support. Classic.
Exactly. Second, Justice Black emphasized the goals of modern sentencing, saying things like rehabilitation and truly individualizing punishment. Those require looking beyond the crime itself and seeing the bigger picture of the offender's life, he argued.
So it's not just about punishing the act, but also figuring out what sentence would actually be best for justice, including, like you said, rehabilitation.
Right on. And his third point was a practical one. He said if judges had to follow the same strict evidence rules as a trial, sentencing would just get bogged down. Can you imagine? Having to call witnesses and cross-examine every single thing in a probation report?
Yeah, that does sound like a logistical nightmare. Mm-hmm. But hold on, how can we be sure judges aren't relying on bad information? What if it's wrong or biased?
That's the core tension in this case. And it's something that's debated even now. The majority in Williams, they basically said, look, we got to trust the system. They prioritized the need for things to run smoothly, to have some flexibility in sentencing, even if that means individuals might not always be perfectly protected from iffy evidence.
Interesting. It's like they weighed two competing ideas and maybe tipped the scales a little too far in one direction. Did Justice Black actually say anything that sums up their view, like a memorable quote or something?
For sure. One that stands out is punishment should fit the offender, not just the crime. That really captures the idea that sentencing needs to be personalized, going beyond just the specific offense. There's another one where they resist using strict evidence rules during sentencing. They argue against freezing evidential procedure in the mold of trial. Like, they didn't want sentencing to become a whole other trial.
Okay, I get their reasoning, but I'm still a bit uneasy about it. You said there was a dissenting opinion, right? Someone must have pushed back against this.
Oh, absolutely. Justice Murphy, he wrote a powerful dissent. And it really speaks to people who feel like the Williams decision gave judges too much power to rely on information that hasn't been properly vetted.
Okay, now this is where it gets juicy. Tell me about that dissent. What were Justice Murphy's main points?
His big argument was, look, in a death penalty case, using secret evidence that hasn't been examined, that's just inherently unfair. We're talking about the ultimate punishment here. Someone's life is on the line.
No kidding. The stakes couldn't be higher.
Exactly. And Justice Murphy really went after the probation report in Williams's case, said it was filled with irrelevant stuff, claims about past crimes that were never proven, and a lot of hearsay, the kind of stuff that wouldn't have flown in the trial.
So Justice Murphy's basically saying the court's sacrificing fairness for efficiency. And maybe for a more well-rounded view of the offender, but still, at what cost?
You nailed it. He felt the court, in giving judges all this power, had ignored the high commands of due process, especially with a life hanging in the balance. Reading his dissent, you can really feel his anger at what he saw as a major injustice.
Wow, that's intense. Sounds like Justice Murphy's dissent really highlights this ongoing debate we have.
Yeah.
How much weight should a judge give to information that hasn't been rigorously tested in court? And how do we balance that with the idea of individualized sentencing and due process? It's a tough one.
Absolutely. It's a puzzle, for sure. And it's fascinating how Justice Murphy's dissent in Williams seems to foreshadow arguments we see in later attempts to change how sentencing works. Cases like Apprendi v. New Jersey and Crawford v. Washington, they're wrestling with these same questions, even though that core ruling from Williams is still the law of the land.
It's kind of crazy how a case from 1949 is still relevant. It's like, wow, the past really shapes our present, huh? But let me ask you this. From a practical standpoint, imagine you're a lawyer, right? Your client's been convicted, and now you're at the sentencing stage. What does Williams v. New York actually mean for you and your client?
Well, it means you better get comfy with that pre-sentence report. You're going to be spending a lot of time with it.
Yeah, that's a given. But what else? Just reading it over?
No way. This is where it gets real for lawyers. See, that report, it often has info that wasn't even brought up at trial. It paints a picture of your client, their past, their personality, and that can really sway the judge's decision on the sentence.
So the takeaway for lawyers is, don't just take the report at face value.
Absolutely not. You got to treat it like a starting point for your own investigation. Look at everything closely. Double check the sources. If there's anything wrong or misleading, you got to challenge it. And most importantly, give it some context.
So it's about showing the other side of the story, your client's side, right?
Exactly. Remember, sentencing isn't just about punishment. It's also about giving someone a chance to change, to rehabilitate. And for that, you got to understand who they are, why they did what they did, and what their potential is.
It sounds like it's less about legal arguments and more about, like, storytelling. Humanizing your client for the judge.
You got it. It's about presenting a narrative, showing their humanity, even if they messed up.
And that all comes back to the idea that the punishment should fit the person, not just the crime itself, huh?
Exactly. And that's where lawyers are crucial. We can help the judge see the whole picture, understand the person behind the crime, so the judge can make a decision that's both fair and compassionate.
So Williams v. New York, it gives judges a lot of leeway, but it also puts a big responsibility on lawyers to fight for their clients and make sure their side is heard.
Totally. And you know, this case reminds us that law isn't just about some abstract ideas. It's about real people, real lives. And it's about how we, as a society, decide to deal with crime.
It's amazing how a case from way back then still affects people caught in the system today.
Yeah, it shows us that law is always changing. And as lawyers, we have a duty to make sure it changes in a just and fair way.
I think we've given everyone listening a lot to think about. Any final thoughts before we move on? Like, any key things to remember from our look at Williams v. New York?
I think the biggest thing is that this case, even with all the debate around it, is really about trying to find the balance between having some flexibility in sentencing to treat each case individually and protecting everyone's right to due process.
And finding that balance, it's not always easy.
You said it. And as lawyers, we got to be aware of that struggle. We got to fight for our clients within the law. And always remember that what we do affects real people's lives.
Well said. This deep dive has really shown how much impact one case can have. And those effects are still felt today. But let's loop it for a second. What about someone who's not a lawyer? Why should they care about Williams v. New York? It's a good question. We've gone through the legal ins and outs, the impact on sentencing, even how lawyers can work within this system. But why should this matter to someone who's not a lawyer? Like, what's the takeaway for the average person?
Because it's a prime example of how the law tries to juggle fairness and practicality, even when the consequences are huge, you know?
Yeah.
Williams v. New York, it gave judges a lot of power, which can be good, but it also raises serious concerns about protecting the rights of someone accused of a crime.
So it's this constant back and forth between making sure the punishment fits the person and making sure their rights aren't trampled on.
Exactly. And this case shows us that this balance is always being debated in the courts, in society, everywhere.
It's like Williams v. New York started a conversation that's still going strong.
For sure. And it's a conversation we should all be part of. How we sentence people who've committed crimes says a lot about us, about our values as a society.
That's a great point. So as we wrap up our look at Williams v. New York, I want to leave our listeners with something to think about. What do you think is the right balance between individualized sentencing and due process? What would a better system look like?
It's a tough question, no easy answers. But by wrestling with it, by talking about it, we can work towards a criminal justice system that's more just and fair for everyone.
Well said. And that's a wrap on our deep dive into Williams v. New York. It's amazing how one case can have so much influence, even decades later. It really shows how the past shapes the present and how we're all part of this ongoing conversation about justice and fairness. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.